Do we have Mr. Zacharias on the phone, the writer of this classic film? Steve Zacharias. I'm a huge fan. This is literally one of my favorite films, if not my favorite. I am so honored to be speaking to you right now. But I'm trapped with millennials who are just have a very different take on this movie because I don't think they had the experiences we did.
Let's hope not.
Well, you're right. But these were based on your experiences, some of them, growing up.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Revenge of the Nerds was my best experience in show business. I was a writer for 35 years, and that was my best experience. It was like we wrote the script, and then the casting was fantastic. The lady who did Airplane cast it, and she's like amazing. And we were very, you know, I loved Risky Business, and Curtis Armstrong was brilliant in that. And mm-hmm. I said, if we get him as Booger, we got a hit.
Can we go back to the writing process, though? What gave you the idea? And tell me about how the writing of it and how it all came together.
All right. Well, first of all, I wrote with my partner, Jeff Buhai, mm-hmm. Who we grew up together in Highland Park, Illinois. And we wrote a script before it called Inside the Enquirer, which was we worked with an editor from the Enquirer magazine about the different stories that go on behind the scenes on the stories in the Enquirer. And then all of a sudden we got called in by David Oakes and Peter Bart.
Okay. Peter Bart, yeah.
And yeah, Peter ended up running what do you call it? The Variety.
Yeah, yeah, he's a monster.
And David was amazing. David was the agent for Woodward and Bernstein during Watergate, and 18 other journalists during Watergate, including Seymour Hersh.
So you went into pitch the Inside the Enquirer to them?
No, we went to meet with them because there was an article in the LA West magazine called Revenge of the Nerds. And it was a story about a bunch of kids out at Cal State Northridge who were dabbling with computers. And computers were very new then. No one, you know, everyone thought computers were entire buildings, you know, the size of an entire building. And these were the first kids that were fooling around with smaller computers. And so they wanted to make a movie out of it. And they were looking for someone who wrote sophomoric humor sophisticatedly, and that's what we did in Inside the Enquirer, and they liked it, and so then they hired us to write Revenge of the Nerds.
And did you take that one line, Revenge of the Nerds, and start fresh there, you know, from...
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. We started right from that. I mean, I was very excited, because I'd been writing, like, ridiculous TV comedy. I did a show called Quark, which was about a garbage ship in outer space, and a pilot called Scalpels for NBC, and just, you know, the most ridiculous things I could think of. When Things Were Rotten, for which was a Mel Brooks television show. Mm-hmm. And so Revenge of the Nerds was just perfect for me it was campy and ridiculous, and yet there was a point to it. And I like to think that we created the nerd race, before that the only thing with nerd was
Happy Days.
Dr. Zeus said the word, I guess, in one of his books, but it wasn't used as a computer nerd. And then Happy Days used the nerd also, but I don't believe it had to do with computers either. So we kind of feel like we styled the entire nerd race and the pecking
how
order
do we,
and the
yeah how do we stop them guys. Now I feel like it's out of control.
Yeah
It's like you're Dr. Frankenstein. We have to everyone light your no there's so much I want to go over, but there's obviously tons of comedy, and to me it still holds up and it's very funny. But were you what about the dramatic sense of it? Was there any meaning to any of that to you, or is it just like more about the comedy?
No, it was about being persecuted. You know, I mean, I was a jock when I was in high school, and there were a lot of nerdy kids, and they were, you know, they were disregarded, even though they were brilliant and sweet and, you know, wonderful, and the jocks were, you know, the gods of the school, and it was an obvious phenomena that we tapped into. And it's really grown into the anti-bullying and the, it's become a phenomenon.
It has, but you mentioned the word persecution, and it's funny because I had all the millennials on our show watch it, and they're all about bully. I mean, everybody. You can't even look at these guys wrong without being labeled a bully yourself, and yet they didn't feel any of it. You know, maybe you should speak to it, Roxy.
Here's the thing.
You have very strong opinions.
I feel as if the bullies were bullied harder than the nerds were. So we've got two columns here. Say you've got column A and column B, and you don't know what's going on in these people's lives. All you know are the facts. In column A, we have a group of people who had something burned on their lawn, they had their house vandalized, they've been shouted names at, they had pigs brought over. And in group B, we have a group of people who were taped unwillingly and unknowingly, were taking pictures of their nude bodies, were shown in the pies, and what I would think would be considered rape, were having somebody had sex with them and didn't let them know who it was, so it was not consensual. If you take those two columns, A and B, who would you say the people being more bullied are? The people in column A or the people in column B?
Well, that was the revenge of the nerds. I mean, the nerds got a stronger revenge on the jocks and the sorority girls than they did. But I agree with you. I mean, that was rape. And that was, you know, and it was, I mean, I would never do the movie like that now.
Yeah, you know, do you think it was?
What I would do now is I would have Lewis teach her how to do trigonometry, and then she falls in love with them, and then they can make love.
but you probably didn't think of it that at the time, that it
no.
was.
No,
by
no,
the way, as a viewer, I didn't think that either back then.
Right. There was a different sensibility, and there wasn't a sensibility. Let's put it like that, and. It was, you know, it's over time, it's become a bad thing to do, and I would never do it again. And also the videoing was terrible too. And you know, you had that that lady who was the sports reporter who had the guy was videoing going
Aaron Andrews.
Through her window at the hotel, you know, and I mean,
maybe he was a nerd.
So, I don't know about that, but it wasn't a good idea to introduce, you know, like. A lot of times media does stuff like that. They introduce terrible concepts. You know, Rod Serling did that,
Twilight Zone
thing where there was a bomb that was going to go off in an airplane, you know, and it puts thoughts into people's minds and it wasn't good.
In terms of this movie holding up, then you're saying you wouldn't do things the exact same way. So do you feel like you almost put this in the media and that's something that you wish you hadn't? Or do you just think it was a different time, so it just kind of goes that way?
Well, I would just say if I knew now what I knew then, I wouldn't have done that.
Right.
Hmm. It's interesting.
It's interesting, though, the way that...
I mean, I would have done something. I would have had them get revenge. You know, I mean, it was fine. They put, the heat on the jockstraps.
That was funny. That's good revenge.
But see, these guys, we were talking earlier, Steve, before we brought you on, and they didn't grow up in a world where we had jocks picking on nerds. I grew up in that world. You know, I knew an ogre. I knew a Stan. We knew all these guys, you know, but back in the 80s. But, you know, by the 90s, unfortunately, they were all taken out. You know, it's all been with the helicopter parenting, I feel. So I never thought.
Well, I don't know where it came from, but you know, I'm a teacher at Columbia College in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
And it's just very open. It's just a very free environment. A very there, you know, I don't see any bullying. I don't see, you know, it's okay to be gay. It's okay to do whatever you want to do, you know. And it's just you know, the kids there are just very open. And it wasn't like that then. It wasn't like that in the 50s, you know. In the high schools with the athletic environment and the college environment, you know, but you know, you know, it's so things have changed.
It's changed.
I was watching
Yeah.
an interview where I think you called your son a nerd, and I was curious because you seemed excited about that. Do you think it's almost easier nowadays to grow up as a nerd than it is as a jock or any of these other terms?
I think it's okay now. Yeah, but there still is bullying. There still is bullying. In fact, I'm working on a bullying project with James Gazvey, and we're doing a play that's an anti-bullying play using the MMA fighting as a part of it. And you know, he's like kind of an expert on bullying, and you know, it's out there. It's, you know, it's still out there. It's still, you know, there's a lot of bullying going on, and you know, to a certain extent, I think it's worse than when I was a kid, you know. And when I was a kid, they just kind of made fun. Now they had physical stuff, and you know, it really can be awful.
It seems like a fine line, though. Do you sometimes, as a writer, just sit there and think, like, gosh, I wish people could take a joke better? Because I don't mean that seriously. I don't mean to show that
No,
they.
I don't. No, I take it seriously. I think that you know, I think we were on the right side of everything except for those two moments, you know, with the video and the rape scene. And there was like zero consciousness about that until, until recently.
Till
I mean,
recently.
I was watching Bill Maher and Seth Rogen was on, and he brought it up. He said Revenge of the Nerds was his favorite movie, and then all of a sudden there was this rape scene in it, and it didn't bother him, you know, when he was a kid or whatever. But now recently, you know, with Bill Cosby, and that's what they were talking about it at the time.
Wow.
You know, you know, it really wasn't right, and you know. I agree with it, but there wasn't really a consciousness of it then. You know, it was it you know, there just wasn't a
It was a
consciousness.
different. It definitely was a different time. I know that. I think it was Harvey Weinstein was trying to reboot this. Do you think it ever gets rebooted, the Revenge of the Nerds franchise?
Well, you know, a lot of people have. I mean, they've shot it. They shot it at Emory College. They spent $12 million and. The president of Emory College found out how raunchy it was and shut it down. So they try everything. So I'm working on a couple of them myself.
Yeah. Would they bring you,
So,
would they get you back involved? How does that work? Do you just write one on spec and then see if you can sell it? Or, you know, because you probably don't have the rights at this point.
no, you have to go through Fox and everything, but there's different things that could be done with it that haven't been done. There's never been a musical, you know.
Interesting.
There's all kinds of stuff that could be done with it now. And then there's different types of remakes and stuff that could be done.
Yeah, how does it look today, though? I mean, again, it probably wouldn't be so black and white, I think, right? I mean, it's because it's a different world.
Yeah, well, you know, I love the Silicon Valley TV show.
I do
I
too.
mean, I mean that really that's what it is today, you know. So I would probably take a different approach than
But there's
that.
almost nerd on nerd crime now in that show. You notice with, you know, their biggest adversaries are bigger nerds. On that show.
Exactly. There's intra-nerd fighting.
Yeah. Do you stay in touch with the staff, I mean the cast?
I'm sorry,
You
what?
stay in touch with the cast from Revenge of the Nerds?
Not really. I mean, I did for a while, but well, you know, we made 3 and 4, and then we hung out a little then, and
I
you
watched
know,
everyone.
and we weren't involved with 2, and it actually got ruined. One of the things I want to go back to is on the first one, you know, there was a very fine line, and maybe this is what you were talking about, as to whether it was mean-spirited or not. And one of my favorite things was walking out of the premiere, I saw Buck Henry and Warren Beatty walking out, and they were arguing about whether it was mean-spirited.
Come on.
No. And so there's kind of there, it was just it, that's what I think made it good was there was a fine line. There was
do you
really
think that?
Fine,
do you think that?
A fine line, and that nerds could be bad. You know.
Oh, Lewis, so right? so when you say mean spirited,
in his cereal.
Would you think? Well, wait. Do you think that they were at that time they were arguing that the nerds were mean spirited or the jocks were too mean spirited? Warren Beatty and Buck.
The whole thing, the whole movie, whether it was mean spirited or not.
Wow.
You know, and it just. You know, it was on that border. It was really on that border, and I think that's what made it good.
Why didn't you write number two?
We didn't write number two because our partner gossiped about the producer's sex life, and we weren't invited to write number two.
Bully.
What's that?
It's a bully.
He was a bully.
Bully move.
but, you know, it's sad because I felt that number two missed the mark, and, you know, where –
I did too. It was the second most anticipated film of the summer, and it was a big bomb. It went out at $25 million in 3 weeks, and it was supposed
so,
to be a huge hit.
So disheartening. What would you have done? What would you have done with number two with a sequel back then?
I don't know, but I think it would have had some meaning to it. You know, it wouldn't have just been dribble.
Do you agree on sending them on?
There would have been some point to it.
Do you think sending them on spring break would that have been?
Yeah, maybe that could have been it, but I'm not sure. I didn't like what they did at all.
You're right. Well, I think you hit the mark. It was just more comedy, and raunch rather than yours had heart. I felt, even though my staff disagrees with me, maybe.
No, I thought that did have heart.
But I feel like if you're right, if it didn't have heart.
Yeah, I mean, what we thought of was we treated the nerds as a persecuted race. So we saw it as, you know, the blacks in the South or the Jews in Germany that's why there was, you know, they were burning stuff.
They're burning the effigy. See, that's what I'm trying to, these guys, but this went over my kid's head. I just tried to explain
that
to them.
Yeah, well,
they
don't know about with the Jews in Germany.
Yeah, you would think.
Or the blacks in the South. So, there's no video games that show that.
You said that you felt like you guys were on the right side of everything except for those two scenes. Have you gotten any, I guess now current day, comments about it being racist at times or a little homophobic with your character? Or is that not something that people have really mentioned?
Not really. Not really. I mean, almost the opposite, that it was not homophobic. That was kind of interesting too. The studio didn't want a stereotypical gay character, but it was okay if it was black.
If the character was black?
Yeah.
The studio said it was okay.
You guys didn't have to fight for that at all. They just said, okay, that's fine.
They liked that better.
Mm. Wow.
Did they say why?
No.
I wanted to know too about the gay character, because there's parts in the movie where they say that the lambda lambda lambdas accept anyone of any race, any creed, and then he chimes in, you know, any sexual orientation, and even the nerds look at him like he's crazy. And then there's also the aspect of he's almost looked at, in my mind, in this movie, which I think's hilarious, but there are aspects of him looking kind of like a pedophile in the movie. He's constantly hanging out with that 12-year-old kid.
I thought he looked like he was the big brother and the responsible one who didn't want the kid staying up at night and partying.
And exercising with him half naked in the living room, you know.
In underoos.
That was the director's fault.
Yeah, blame it on him.
But Steve, isn't it incredible?
We wrote in no scene where the two of them are exercising in front of a television.
Yeah,
but isn't
it incredible though, Steve, the way these kids view it from the way this was viewed 20 or 30 years ago? I'm blown away right now. You're probably not, because you teach every day, so you deal with this every day. I'm just
well,
shocked.
I really don't, because, you know, I have no idea why, but it's never on iTunes. It's not on Google Play. So the kids today haven't really even seen it, a lot of them.
We found it on HBO Go, so that's a victory.
That's new. That's new, because I started complaining and they started showing it on HBO Go. It's only about 6 months old.
Oh, really?
Have you spoken to – do you have a relationship with people at Fox?
No. No.
Okay.
I just wanted to jump in because you early on you started talking about the casting, and it's funny because you watch it and it's just amazing who's in this. You know, Anthony Edwards, and it's such a small part, but John Goodman's fantastic.
Yeah.
Timothy Busfield,
John
very
Goodman,
young.
When the director, by the way, was fantastic, Jeff Canoe. He really made the movie great. I mean, he really got it. He made it better. He made the script better, and he did the casting, he saw John Goodman. He said, "This guy is going to be a superstar." I've never seen anything like it. He said, from one session on this little teenage, you know, hijinks comedy, he has one meeting with the guy and he knows he just thinks the guy's fantastic.
John Goodman recently said on Howard, how much he actually prepped for the role. And he based it on many coaches he had growing up. And the fact that I thought also Howard said it was also a film that he loved as well, I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. It's got its place. And if Fox would have promoted it right and this and that, it would have a much bigger place. Like I say, it's never been on iTunes. I mean, for 20 years, you couldn't find it.
Well,
I don't know what they're doing or what they were doing, but and then if you remake it, I don't know if that'll work. You know, I mean, so many of these movies are ruined in remakes.
I've never seen one improved ever.
I'm sorry.
I've never seen one improved. I've always seen them step down the remake. Have you seen any of these reboots that are better?
I can't think of it. I really can't. I mean, they ruined all the Italian movies, you know, and the French movies, and they, you know,
I go to Americana. So Longest Yard, it thought was lesser. I think Bad News Bears was lesser.
The Fly.
Zoolander.
The Fly.
Was The Fly better?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
But you mentioned if you wanted that they hadn't done a musical yet. Is that something that you've been pushing for or you'd be interested in working
yes,
on?
Yes, I'd love to do it. I think it'd be a perfect musical. And I could fix what the rape scene.
Next Thursday, I believe we have the president of Fox Movie Channel in studio. And also there's Jim Giannopoulos, who's the president of all Fox movies. I happen to date a Greek who's part of there is a Greek mafia in Hollywood. So I'm going to have to kick some tires on this. I can't let it go. I love this movie. I really do.
No, I do too. It was my best experience in show business. And the story was the true story of my next door neighbor. I went to the University of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And my next door neighbor had that happen to him. He didn't get into any of the fraternities. And he started his own fraternity, and it was just a horrible fraternity. They'd lose 80-0 in football, and you know their parties were nerdy, but they had a ball, you know.
Did
so
they
that was
the stuff
that
with
was
the women?
Basis of it.
Did they videotape any sororities, or was that in your guys?
No, well, they weren't into revenge. The revenge was was this group of nerds. Mm. So no, they didn't. They weren't bullied. Well, I mean, I don't know if they were bullied. I mean,
I want to step away from Nerds, if I may, which I can't believe I'm saying because it is one of my favorite films. But when I look at your resume, I'm blown away because you have a very diverse slate. Some of my favorite TV shows. Can you talk about your experience writing for The Odd Couple? You did the one episode.
Well, Gary Marshall was my manager.
Wow.
I was involved with a really good group of people, Gary Marshall being the best. One of my first jobs was on The Odd Couple. He would pay, I think he'd pay me $5 a joke. I would write, you know, 10 or 20 clean and dirty jokes, you know, and then Gary would read them. And if he liked some, then he'd mark them down. Then maybe there'd be 8 or 9 or something. And then I'd wait 6 hours, and at the end of the reading on the set, they'd show him to Tony Randall and
Jack Klugman, and
they'd look at him and go, "Oh, these are shit," and they'd throw them away, and just everyone would walk out, you know. So, I mean, that was my first experience working on a show, and Klugman and Randall were the consummate professionals.
Tell me about them on that show. It's one of my favorite shows.
It was brilliant. It was a brilliant show. Yeah.
Tell me about them. Speaking of
Marshall's brilliant. Gary Marshall, he's got to be one of the top TV guys ever.
Ever. Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley guys.
Norman Lear and Jim Brooks and you know, of that time period.
That time.
You know?
And he's still directing.
He had 6 shows on the air at once.
And still directing today. But go back, speak to why were the, what you said, the consummate professionals were Klugman and Randall.
They just, they knew what they were doing. They knew what they liked. They were very professional about it. They delivered. I mean, they were just the consummate professionals, the two of them.
Did they have fun making that series? Could you tell?
They did with each other. Yeah, that was a fun show. People had fun on that show. Some of the shows weren't so fun, but that.
Which
that
ones weren't fun?
Laverne and Shirley was supposed to be a nightmare. I didn't work on it, but it was supposed to be really bad.
Happy Days was that Happy Days set? You also wrote
Happy Days. Was a blast. Happy Days was a blast.
Is that where you met Probably. Ted McGinley?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, Ted being cast in Nerds was a surprise. I didn't say get Ted McGinley to play the part. You know, they came up with him, and he is a sensational guy. He's just he's a great person, really sweet. He's very professional too, and very successful. He really had a great.
I mean,
career.
I think there's no coincidence that he worked so much because he probably is just that great a guy. You know what I mean? He's probably a great guy to have on
everyone
set.
Everyone loves him. Everyone loves him. And he's funny. He's funny as hell. You know, he'll really just do stupid humor beautifully.
Tell me about the Partridge Family.
Partridge Family was that when I left Wisconsin, coming out to Hollywood, where my friend Alan Mendel helped me get into show business. The goal in my mind was to write for Partridge Family, and because again I'm not good with reality, so it was whimsical. It was actually just a very easy show for me to write.
What do you mean you're not good with reality?
I don't do well with reality, and so I couldn't write a real movie or a real show or even deal with any reality,
real life situation. It needs to be a little fantastic.
Yeah, it's just everything's pretty ridiculous, and Partridge Family was just the perfect show for that, and it was just light and whimsical. And
did you work on set? Did you interact with the actors on that show as well?
Yeah, and that one we would, because it was really fun the way it was shot. I mean, it was very easy. Some of these shows are really hard to shoot, and that was really easy. So, they shot kind of from 9 to 5. I had to be there, and the scripts were done. They were shot like a movie, so the scripts were done before they shot them. And, on the multi-camera shows, you're up 3 nights a week, you know, working until 4 in the morning, not on a one camera film show. They're all, it was just really nice and reasonable. And it was a top 10 show. And I didn't realize what a big star David Cassidy was. He was a terrific guy. And,
young Danny Bonaducci. Do you remember working with him?
Yeah, he was hysterical. I loved him. He was my favorite. And Susan Day was, I was good friends with her. And, Dale McCraven was great. He really kind of made that show. He was a terrific writer. I don't know if you've heard of him.
He's right. No.
He wrote. Pardon?
No, I haven't heard of him.
Oh, he was amazing. He's the one that made Partridge Family great. And then there was, he also did Mork and Mindy. I think he did the Dick Van Dyke Show and everything. He was in with Gary Marshall in that group. And there was just a tremendous Hollywood group around Gary Marshall with, you know, Penny Marshall and Rob Reiner and Albert Brooks. And, you know, it just, it was an amazing, Nancy Shire and Chuck Shire. And, you know, it was an amazing group of writers.
Are you in touch with anyone from those days of Hollywood, the actors, you know?
I run into people from time to time, you know, some people. I mean, my rabbi or whatever, my biggest supporter was Brandon Tartikoff.
ABC, right? Or NBC. NBC, excuse me. Sorry.
Brandon Tartikoff was the greatest network executive ever. And I was very fortunate that he was my backer. So his first job in Hollywood was... I did a show called Quark, which was about a garbage ship in outer space, and it was created by Buck Henry. And so Brandon's first job in show business was in current programming on our show. So he hung out with us, and he went to dailies, and he loved the show, and this and that. And a month and a half later, he was named the president of NBC. You know, so I was friends with him, and he ran the network, you know, and controlled $2 billion worth of money each year, and it was really phenomenal. I'm surprised you haven't heard of him.
Of course we have. No, I've heard of him. These kids probably haven't, but oh, so yeah, no, he was huge. In as far as the actors, do you stay in touch with some of the actors from that time period?
The actors?
Yeah, when you think.
You know, I was friends with Dudley Moore a little bit. Remember Dudley Moore?
Of course, from Arthur. Yeah.
Yeah, he. I wrote a movie called The Truth About Swedes, and Dudley wanted to star in it. And Tuesday Weld was going to be in it. And I went through a whole thing with him, and he was. And then Dick Benjamin was the star of Quark.
Dick Benjamin. That one you got me on. I don't think I'm a TV-aholic. I don't know Dick Benjamin.
Okay, he was a big star. He actually was a very successful director. He directed My Favorite Year for Mel Brooks.
Oh my God, amazing film.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
amazing. Based no, on
Dick,
what
Dick
Errol
was
Flynn,
a great
right?
director. He made a lot of films and a great guy. And a great actor. I mean, people loved him. He was in Goodbye Columbus.
Gotcha. And then Westworld, I see. Oh, yeah. Wow. You know, he's still working. Children's Hospital, which Henry Winkler does, and Ray Donovan. Oh, he's mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Okay. I know who this guy is. Oh, yeah. He's phenomenal.
Yeah, he's very famous. He's very, very famous. Or he was. You know, it's interesting. As you get old, you don't know the new stars. You know, so to me, all these, you know, he was a really big star, and the kids today probably wouldn't even know who he is.
So tell us about the Emmy you won on All in the Family. Was that where you got your Emmy?
Yes, it was Emmy. Well, and the Emmy and on the Family, it was my story idea. And I went into All in the Family and pitched the story idea. And basically, Norm and Lear said, we're going to buy this, but we're not going to let you write it. And I said, well, what do you mean you're not going to let me write it? And he said, well, you know, what do you know about menopause? And I said, well, my mother's going through menopause. And he said, well... we're going to have, so they had this other guy write it. I don't know if I should say his name. Why not? Bert Stiler.
Okay.
And the script was no good. And then Don Nickel, who I think is one of the greatest writers in the history of television, wrote the script, and it was sensational. So I couldn't even argue with him.
This was for Edith's Problem?
Yes.
Got it.
Yes. And it won the Emmy, and I got a certificate, and, you know, I was 23, 24 years old.
Damn.
You know, so it was pretty neat.
That's what you get, a certificate.
You probably got the you probably got a trophy too, didn't you?
No, you don't get the trophy if you only get a story credit.
You still get the claim.
We should make you a fake trophy.
Yep.
Put it up anyway.
Well, you know, my dad used to gold plate the trophies, and he gave me one, so I had a fake one.
Oh nice. My God, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And did you work with Carol O'Connor in anyone? Did you have any interaction with
him? No, I was friendly with Rob Reiner.
Damn.
And I used to play basketball with him.
And you're not in touch with him anymore?
I sometimes. I saw him a couple of years ago. I'm in Chicago now, so they're
no,
all.
No, I know.
LA.
So yeah.
Yeah. So I don't see a lot of the people. I see Gary Marshall, you know, every once I check in with him.
And no, he has another film coming out. Is it Mother's Day that Gary?
Yes.
Just, I mean, it's incredible.
Well, Ken, you speak about being in touch with him, but your last IMDb credit is 20 years ago now. Is there something else that you feel like you need the world to know, a story you need to tell, or do you think that we won't be hearing your words anytime soon?
Well, I'm writing novels and I write screenplays, so I know I'm still with hope to do something, and I'm really into these web series projects. But I quit the business pretty much when I was 50 years old. I just quit it. I was, you know, you're thrown out when you're 50, and you know you either are hot or you're not, and I couldn't go down one more hallway and tell one more vice president of a studio one more ridiculous idea. I just couldn't do it. So I just sold my house and I moved back to Chicago.
Are there web series you're working on now? I love that you're interested in them.
Yeah. Oh, you know, as for the kids breaking into Hollywood, I think that's the way to do it. And so I'm a teacher now. I have, you know, a couple hundred students. And so I encourage them to make these web series, and I love now that you can make these things with your phone. So I made a pilot. I have a Steve Zacharias videos on Vimeo, and I made a full length 120 minute movie called A Nerd in the Woods, which is me driving around the country, going to all the most beautiful places in the country, and just talking into the camera myself, holding it myself. Not, you know, I love that you can just make movies with your phone.
So non-scripted? Yeah. You just were speaking off the cuff?
Yeah, non-scripted. But the editing is amazing too, because you edit it on iMovie. And you know, you can do a really good job with it, and I love it for the kids breaking in, because they don't need a production company, they don't need a studio, they don't need a manager, they don't need an agent. They can, you know, Workaholics became a series, Broad City became a series,
Sunny in Philadelphia,
Drunken History became a series. And my favorite one was High Maintenance, which is coming on HBO, I think, now, this year. Do you know High Maintenance?
Mm-mm.
Nope. But we will.
Oh, take a look at it. Watch the episode called Matilda. It's amazing.
Cool.
It's very well written. And I know it was the first on-demand movie on Vimeo. I think it's going on HBO.
Love hearing that.
So this, to me, this is the way the kids should break in. And so we made a little on my Vimeo site. We made a 6-minute pilot about a student in college, you know, and we just improvised it and ad-libbed it and stuff like that. And then, you know, and then we reshoot it, or we rework it, or we do this, or we do that. I'm just encouraging people to make these things. You know, not just write them, but go make them.
That must be gold to your ears, Kevin, because that's
no,
what you're saying.
I say that all
the time.
No, I say it all the time too. That's the great thing about this world. That is the great part of the world with the technology. And yeah, it wouldn't be the way it was for guys like you, you know, with spec scripts and all that.
Oh
stuff.
My God, we had nothing like this. We, you know, we had to write a script, and then, you know, you had to know someone. I mean, you still have to know someone. But you know, and then they have to like your script, and then you have to get an opportunity, and then you have to write a good one when you get it, and then if you're lucky, you're in. I broke into show business without nepotism. I didn't know anyone. I had my friend from college, Alan Mandel, who was out there working on The Odd Couple, and I wrote a spec script, and then Gary Marshall read him and liked him, and then he signed me. So, you know, that was it. But nowadays, it's, you know, these kids, they love it. They're very talented, and it's just very hard to break in. But with the web series, they can really do it.
Steve Zacharias, thank you so much for calling in and and sharing all this amazing information. And I'll be a fan for of yours and this movie for many, many, many years to come.
And for being so honest with us.
Yeah, I love really it. Appreciate it. And by the way, Nolan, I'm going to get back in touch with you because I'm going to, you know, let me just knock on some doors and see, because I don't know. It shouldn't die. It's just such a big, I think you're right. I think it's musical. I think there's just other things to do with this. So
yeah, there's more things to do. I'm working on some of them. I'm actually working with a group now to do something like that. So, I think there are opportunities out there.
Please keep us posted. And
I will do.
And
nice talking to you.
No, nice talking to you. And we can get, so it's Steve Zacharias on Vimeo. If we go to Vimeo, we can find your stuff.
Yeah, if you Googled Steve Zacharias videos on Vimeo,
we'll be able
you
to.
You'd get to them.
And are you on social media? Do you do any of that stuff? Twitter or anything?
No, my son does it all for me and pretends like he's me because I can't do it. and just embarrasses me and does terrible things.
Typical nerd. Yeah.
At least you're honest. Is it at Steve Zacharias?
He's John Zacharias is my son. And he is a tremendous optimizer.
What's your handle though? Your Twitter handle.
I don't know.
I don't even
know what handle.
We'll find out. These millennials will find out. I think, you know, my advice is you should talk to your son. You need some kind of Revenge of the Nerds handle. Something that says Revenge of the Nerds.
I think he's done that.
He probably has.
I think he's done all kinds of stuff.
All right, we're going to find out. We'll do our due diligence. And Steve, hopefully we'll stay in touch. And once again, thank you so much for coming on tomorrow's show. All right. We're going to go to a quick commercial break.